Humanoid robots are taking over the world. At least that's what you would imagine from this past weekend and the handful of videos from China of all of these kung fu dancing humanoid robots. Today we're going to get into four mini debates here. Humanoids, are they overhyped? Are they underhyped? US versus China, humanoid and generalizable robotics versus specialized robotics, and technical unemployment versus we all have amazing jobs into the future. Nick, you are pretty doomsday-y this morning when I spoke to you. What's going through your mind?
Yeah, I spent the weekend AI doom maxing, especially after I saw the video of robots doing kung fu. And I think, you know, more and more, is there a potential where humanoid robots, what we're also seeing within software and AI agents, is the bull case for AI becoming a bear case for society? And I think, yes.
This is a dumb take. So, like, let's just start out with this idea of technological unemployment. I'm ignoring Sam's careful outline here. The idea of technological unemployment is you have this technological tool that enters the marketplace and it provides a special purpose function for humanity. And therefore, everybody who's working in that sector basically gets obliterated. They go into, you know, have to go out on the farm and like twiddle out their days sitting in the rocking chair because they no longer have anything to do. And people at every technological transition argue that this is going to occur. And every historical anecdote of this, when you unpack it, it doesn't hold true. I'll give you a common, actually a more recent one that I just looked up. Hey, we all have gone from having either no camera on our person to a camera on our person at all times, and a professional quality camera. And so you would think that professional photographers would be basically sitting on the street corner begging for food. Because, like, we can all be professional photographers now. I have portrait mode on my iPhone up there, and I can take professional portraits. As it turns out, from 2010 to today, professional photographers employed in the U.S. is up by a third, the number of professional photographers. So the proliferation of smartphones, the amazing advance of photography, that hasn't caused photography unemployment. It caused more demand for professional photography services. And I think you can generalize that across the board. Having like great coding agents is not going to like diminish the utility of knowing how to code, nor is having great robots going to diminish the utility of knowing how to figure out what to make and to design and make that stuff. It's just going to mean that we're producing more. So I think that
I'm going to add on here because Nick, you're wrong, which is one, even Brett, to someone commented on your take there and they said, oh, well, isn't that because of social media? And it's like, yes, but that's the whole point. Social media would not exist if we didn't all have cameras. And it's insane to think that AI is going to be so powerful that it's going to replace all these people and then somehow not be able to be used by all of these people for something else. I think maybe a more compelling argument would be that AI concentration of power could be different, but the technological unemployment side seems shaky. Nick, explain yourself. Be optimistic. Why are you sad?
Well, I think there's two ways to frame this discussion, which is one where you have human in the loop. But if you look at the humanoid robotic example, you're taking the human completely out of the loop, even with some of the AI agent or the bull case for AI specifically. AGI is human completely out of the loop. It's not I have a tax accountant who's using AI to do more tax accounting efficiencies. It's no, my AI or my accountant is AI. And it's not just I have to go and prompt this AI to do my taxes every year. It's just there, ambient in the background, collecting all of this information. And at the end of the year, my taxes get done for me. So how does that not displace a large portion of the employment base faster than you can retrain them into something else? Especially if you go and look back at this video where you have humanoid robots flying around the air, doing all of this specialized like skills. And then so you have a huge white collar layoff happening or potentially. Where do you then go and retrain that workforce?
Wait a minute. Where is this white collar layoff coming from? You're just inventing it. You're saying this is going to happen. This white collar layoff is something that you are just inventing, that's that you're asserting is going to happen.
If you have full AGI in the way that I just described, I'm not giving this 100%.
So you're inventing a technology where human out of the loop, it does everything. We can't do additional things because AI can cover everything.
Can get there in most specialized areas. Can you not? Like, can you not imagine a world where you have AI just able to do exactly what a human does today without human intervention? Yes, the answer is yes.
Okay, well let's use this to move into our
Somebody
next
has to turn on the switch. You have to say, hey, I have scarce compute resource. I'm devoting it to some place. Somebody has to allocate kind of like, where exactly am I targeting this resource? And that's, so there's this Citrini research piece that was out that kind of, you know, basically advances that. It's like the cost of agents falls to the cost of electricity. Agents are incredibly expensive to run right now. There is a like very, very, very small compute supply that we're all trying to run all at the same time to have them do these things. And in their research, the way they get it wrong is they're like, oh, you know, these things are incredibly profitable and productive, but there's this missing translation to the underlying labor force. Well, if they're incredibly productive, that means somebody has to be accruing resource and they're going to do something with that. They don't just sit on it. Look at Elon Musk's behavior. He's constantly on the edge of running out of money because he's constantly redeploying billions and billions of dollars into kind of like the next leg of the game. And so the idea that somehow we're going to be satisfied with, oh, this is how much we're doing, and then therefore we're not going to reinvest into additional compute power to then power additional agents to do additional stuff. To build that additional compute power, you need
that redeployment.
To build that additional compute power, you have to have somebody build the data center. You have to have somebody kind of motivate in the power. These are all things that require human time and attention. Even if you're running a set of robots that are doing it for you, you're still having to kind of direct them, negotiate the back-end contracts on kind of like getting in the resources that you need for the specific spot. Like, there's no universe, well, maybe there's a universe, but there's not a solar system in which there doesn't have to be continued coordination function of the underlying allocated resources enable this sort of future that everybody's pointing towards and saying, oh, then that eliminates the need for humans at all.
Okay, so then this gets to the next point, human in the loop or not, which is humanoid robots, are they overhyped or are they underhyped? Also, for the record, Nick really wanted to be on the anti-AI side because he's predicting civil unrest. And when they come for the people, the aristocracy who's been supporting AI, he doesn't want to be up on trial and getting Russian revolution. But
I need to have a balanced take here. Some episodes, doomer, some episodes, optimistic.
Brett, overhyped, underhyped?
I'm going to turn the question around to you. I think that the kung fu fighting robots as a sign of the general capability of humanoid robots is overhyped. As in, take those out of their context and they would fall down and flop around on the floor. I virtually guarantee it. But what do you think, Sam?
Yeah, so this is what I say, and it often breaks people's minds, which is, they are underhyped if we go out 10 years, and I think they are overhyped if we look in the next 3 years. And I think this is clear. I'm just gonna go from the company creation side of this. Same thing happened with electric vehicles. You know, there's been a boom of these companies created. In China, I think there's something like 300. You can look, there's been, I don't know, maybe like 12,000 of these humanoid robots sold, mostly for advertising R&D. Even in all of these videos that came out over the weekend, it sounds as though, you know, this wasn't a demonstration. This was essentially a Super Bowl halftime commercial where they paid $14 million to be able to show that their robots can dance so that they can then go public and raise more money because they need to keep on developing in order to get there. And so I think, you know, this idea that all of these robots are gonna completely replace humans in the next couple of years is way overhyped, but it's very clear what the end solution and end state here is, which is more data, more compute leads to incredible outcomes. And there's no reason that's not going to happen in an extremely profound way with robots.
I do think that the Chinese videos, what they are indicative of is the quality of their supply chain for these particular parts. And the mechanical actuation is really remarkable. And you could go back a decade and look at the Boston Dynamics video of the robot like jumping around and doing front flips and stuff, and have come to the conclusion back then, oh, this is obviously going to be able to do, you know, remarkably manually capable stuff by now. But these kind of like orchestrated, quasi-puppeted, now the puppeting has gotten better, but still like very controlled demonstrations of physical capability overlook the fact that on our estimates, the difficulty of doing humanoid robot, a general purpose humanoid robot is 20 million times higher than doing a robo-taxi, but then you are 100 times more error tolerant. So 200,000 times harder than doing a robo-taxi. And again, you could rewind a decade and be like, gosh, robo-taxi is on the verge of happening. Waymo's running around in streets today. Clearly, this is going to commercialize immediately. And now we're just at the tipping point where we think it's going to scalably commercialize and this year. So I think the humanoid robot space is in a similar space to where robotaxi was really a decade ago. You can kind of accelerate the clock by throwing lots of resources at AI compute to like solve the software problem to some degree. And having this big supply chain in China probably helps Chinese companies at least potentially compete in the space. But I do think it's, buy one of those robots for yourself and have it try to do something for you. And then you'll have a better understanding of how capable they are.
And that's not to say anything about when to deploy capital, because in the consolidation period, arguably the best time to make those investments, as long as you can pick the winners, because that's normally where the wheat and the separation from the chaff occurs. All right. But that, Brett, you mentioned China being extremely good at manufacturing here. Mini debate 3, Nick, US versus China. This applies humanoid robots, open source models. Who's winning the future?
Based on the videos you're showing us, China. But if you believe Elon Musk, then Optimus and Tesla should be the one that wins longer term. Like, I'm interested because, Sam, you said that you don't believe within 3 years humanoid robots will be meaningful, but I'm pretty sure Elon tweeted at Kathy off of one of her takes that by 29 it should have a profound impact on the economy. So clear disagreement there. I don't know how to reconcile that.
Well, it's interesting you frame it as China versus Tesla, right? That's a
well, is there anyone else in the US? I mean, this is your field, so don't ask me on.
Of course, there's other companies. I think AI lab out there is going to be leaning into this because eventually you need to move off the computer and into the real world. But Brett, what's your take?
Well, I mean, China has the smartphone manufacturing supply chain, but that didn't mean that they ended up controlling the economics of the smartphone business. So here it's slightly different because I do think that mechanical actuation piece feeds into your ability to get data and your ability to actually train the underlying models you need for these robots. You can think like the automotive problem is actually relatively simple. Your sensors are fixed at a fixed height above the road. You have a relative, like your inputs are very simple, like, gas, brake, left, right. Like it's so, so rudimentary and we still struggle with it. Here, your sensors change based upon what the mechanical actuation does throughout your robot's body. You have, order of magnitude more, probably more total actuators and number of controls you need to do. And so there's probably a more tight coupling between the ability to manufacture and the ability to solve the software problem. I think that the, and kind of going further up stack, getting electrical power to power the chips that you need to train this software is a clear potential choke point, particularly in the US, where people are throwing themselves in front of the bulldozers that are trying to build data centers because they erroneously believe that water resource constraints are going to cause them to dehydrate because the data centers are going to soak up all the water. There are a lot of reasons to believe that China is well positioned for this emergent trend. absent the fact that they don't have access to the most cutting edge chips from NVIDIA. So now that's like kind of lay of the land. Philosophically, I think that you need to encourage risk taking and allow people to make enormous, you know, personal advancements based upon taking risks. And I think the Chinese government, at least historically, has not facilitated people to take those kinds of personal risks, whereas the U.S. and the really like the limited liability company in the U.S. and Western markets lets people take giant risks and then be rewarded if those risks play true. And so I think that would play in the U.S. favor.
Is that not true in China? So this was described on our brainstorm. In the U.S., let's say we have a dozen-ish humanoid robotics companies. In China, 300, each from provinces. And it's almost like a tournament game where it's like, you know, there's going to be a national champion. And so you've got 300 companies all fighting to be the best, to surface to the top, even though it might not be the same culture as the U.S. It seems like that's more hyper-competitive in terms of getting.
But the reason there are 300 companies is because it's already a distorted playing field where each company probably has its own municipal champion who is funding it through kind of the purse of the government in some way. And so you don't have, like, who becomes the national champion is not necessarily a function of who finds exact product market fit and stuff, but who aligns kind of the state resources behind them in the right way. And so then you reward kind of a different set of actions than what that which would create like the most competitive product selling into the global marketplace. That's at least the history.
Ex Tesla, then why do they make the best electric vehicles?
Well, it's a fair question. I mean, how much subsidy is going into those electric vehicles and what happens as their domestic market semi falls apart and they try to sell into Europe and elsewhere? And it could be that the game has changed. I mean, it could be that, you know, there's kind of enough market motivating factors in place such that it allows kind of the winner to emerge. I think it remains to be seen.
Sam, are there international standards and benchmarks for robots, like akin to what we look at for large language models, where you could compare China versus US robots?
No, not that. I mean, people try and compare. I'd say we're still so early that the reason you're seeing them do kung fu and dance is because they're not in a
capable
factory
of anything else.
Right. And that's not to say that things that start off as games and play, right? Like that's typically how disruption can occur. You write it off because, oh, it's funny, it's dancing. Next thing you know, it's making the car by itself. But I think we are still early enough where there's not really a clear benchmark for these.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's also dangerous to like, you brought up the electric vehicle industry. China is going to see year over year demand reduction in electric vehicle from end consumers purchasing, it looks like. This supply chain is built off of the back of that. And so I do wonder how kind of the ramifications of kind of those entities trying to sell outside of China, plus the Chinese government saying you can't sell internally at below the cost to produce, is going to like ping pong into what's going on in humanoid robots. If you're being rewarded for producing a humanoid robot that can kung fu dance, then you're going to end up with 300 companies that produce that. And you might not end up with any company that can do anything more than that. That's like the, call it, downside case for this, is kind of you're rewarding a thing that is a show-offy thing that's not an actual real, we're finding a business product use that actually works. I'm surprised that there's only like, I don't know, it's on the order of 40,000 of these, you know, robot dogs that have been sold into the marketplace. You would think people would be able to find like good uses for those things, but so far, not in any way that causes demand to skyrocket.
Are you saying kung fu is easier than laundry? Because I feel like a laundry video would be what really catches everyone's attention.
Here's the thing, Nick. I'm sure, how good are you at folding laundry?
Not great.
Well, so there you go. It's pretty hard.
That's fair enough.
But it's not only that. It's kind of, I think that people look at things and say, well, for me, that would be a really hard thing to do. Therefore, I think it must be really hard, but it ignores a lot of stuff that actually is really hard for the robot to do that you do totally intrinsically and easily.
Yeah.
And it can be down to kind of like the reasoning stuff as well. It's like something knocks off a table. Where is it? Where should I look for it to pick it up? You know, like we know, well, it's under the table. And if it's not under the table, it slipped under the rug or, you know, and so I think that they are more severely software limited than we can even really internalize or understand because of how much kind of processing and intuition we do is just like totally second nature that for them was probably a fair amount more challenging.
Yeah. All right, Brett, you brought up that maybe 40,000 robot dogs have been sold, a puzzle. Similarly, industrial robots. So back to like 1960, from the birth of the robot arm, essentially, there's been roughly 7 million sold, with roughly 500,000 of those being in 2024. So very near term weighted. And certainly more of these could be sold, but they're not. And so the question is, you know, is the humanoid the key or the generalizable nature of, you know, software based robotics opening up this market? Or is there a boom on specialized robotics as well? What's the dynamic between these two?
I think humanoids provide a good humanoid robot will increase demand for specialized robots. Somebody just shared an anecdote with us where they have, I think they were claiming it was a use of humanoid robots that was working, right? Where it's like a 3D printer was producing parts and the humanoid was just taking it and stripping off the excess material and passing it to the next thing. So that increases the utility of the 3D printer. And it's only possible because you have something with a human form factor that can reach out and take out the part. And so it's kind of like a connective tissue between specialized robots can make every specialized robot itself easier to install and better, because you don't need to kind of be like, now I'm going to design this whole custom automation process between the two specialized robots I want to use. And if I don't do that, then I don't get the ROI I need. And so I think that the specialized robots clearly increase in their capability with AI and with kind of lower cost to manufacture specialized parts. And combining the two actually should cause an inflection in the uptake of specialized robots and provide a useful function that humanoids can produce within kind of the value chain.
All right. Last week, we asked for questions from our viewers, and we got two excellent ones. So we'll start off with the first, and then we'll answer the second, which is the one I think we're all more interested in. But the first is, what's the likelihood of any SpaceX-Tesla merger or quasi-merger this year?
Sam,
you have what's to answer the likelihood?
I have to answer the question? I think this year it is fairly low. I think down the road it increases much more significantly. I think Tesla is working on the chips, but those are probably not ready for the next couple of years. I also think there's a lot of reasons to let Tesla appreciate and be recognized for its robo-taxi capability before you try and swap shares. And so it'd almost be hurting Tesla shareholders to do it preemptively, because they'd be getting diluted to a greater degree.
Yeah, I agree. I think 27 or later is, I would guess end of 27, early 28, if I had to put a spot at which it's going to happen.
All right, and then the next question. Can Brett make it through an episode without drinking like he just came out of the desert?
I made it almost all the way.
I didn't even notice it. I'm like glad someone caught on. I had no
idea. I didn't notice it either until I saw the comment, but yeah. It's pretty funny.
Well, usually I'm drinking coffee. I need it to like keep words per minute up. So that's the
Sam, question, just going back to Tesla SpaceX before we depart. Do you think the timeline accelerates if Tesla's car sales continue to decline?
I think then it's even more important for Robotaxi to demonstrate the value.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think that Tesla is independent of its unit sales. I mean, unit sales are important as a kind of feedstock input into the model, but they have a set of assets out there. Their existing production rate roughly flat is still sufficient to generate a huge cash flow outcome on the basis of Robotaxi. And once they start doing cyber cabs, it's like, you know, it really could be remarkable.
We'll see. I have version 14 now. by
the new pricing on the Cybertruck is pretty compelling. It's pretty compelling.
Yes.
So I have version 14 and it's good. It was part
amazing.
Of the reason I started spiraling about AI doom maxing over the weekend, because I'm like, there's going to be nothing left for us to do.
What are you talking about? You're going to be able to watch Netflix.
Yeah,
that's something. It. That's something you can do.
Entertainment is probably the best place to be positioned in all of this.
And to produce that Netflix content, somebody is going to have to be tasking the AI agent with like producing it, and so they'll have to.
Using your logic, entertainment is only valuable if you can advertise against it, and advertising is worthless if the person watching it doesn't have money to deploy against it.
Sam, trust me, I was there this weekend. I don't want to get back into that death spiral of I think that is a real possibility.
All right,
there's no universe in which nominal GDP is growing in the high single digits where that doesn't result in people being like, wow, I have a lot of money to spend. I'm going to spend it on some stuff.
Yeah, that's but they will works. Have to be the companies that kick it out to us in the form of UBI.
I mean, we all own shares in companies and we all work for companies and they, you know, pay some of
we
that out to employees.
And
well, then you'll work for yourself.
What I do say, I will say, I think the student debt problem is likely what leads to civil unrest. It's like, I think there are, it's like the entry level job requirements is increasing, right? You need to provide far more value now than you used to because of AI and what it does. And simultaneously, I think you have education and higher education that's done grade inflation and made it easier and easier to get by without really providing value. And so there's this growing gap. And simultaneously, you have a whole group of people who've been sold that all you have to do is show up and you'll be fine. And that's not true. And now they've got $150,000 in debt.
Yeah, exactly. So if you are able to hit a point where it is easier to prompt Claude to do something for you than it is easier to prompt someone right out of college, you have a problem on your hands that needs to be fixed, because you will just have an unemployment gap, as you're describing, Sam, in a very young population, people who were sold a dream that they would get a job right out of college. They have a ton of debt. And that's the last like portion of the population you want to have nothing to do on a day-to-day basis.
That's right. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up or does it explode? All right. We'll see everyone next week.
We should get Kathy on to talk more about this macroeconomic disturbance.
Ask more great questions and we'll try and answer them.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate, unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.